Welcome back to RBKD. Usually it's the Bat Tuesday right here on RBKD. But since it's a solo edition, RB without the KD, KD's taking care of some personal things. He's fine. Everything is good with him. But had to do some adulting. So usually, you know, he's the one doing KD karaoke doing Bat Tuesday. So he's always making requests to John. He's hyping it up. He's having a good time. And I like Bat Tuesday. It's fun. I was listening to the Bat this weekend. It's an awesome station. But today, we veered off track a little bit. First, John. This is John's doing, by the way. John Reichel turned the Specs text line into a request line, which then had him thinking and hearkening back to his days as a college student disc jockey.
That's right.
A disc jockey in college. And the name of your show, it was a late night time slot, right?
Yeah, late night time slot on KUGR. And that was John's Jukebox Joyride.
So it would seem that now we are reliving John's past in a sense. And this just kind of turned into John's Jukebox Joyride. It's kind of a Bat Tuesday,
yeah,
but also now hybridized with John's Jukebox Joyride.
Exactly. So on this near fifth year anniversary of my last broadcast on that show, I'm bringing it back. So
I like it.
You know
like
what? Yeah, just keep your requests to the 80s and 70s era, and you might just get it. So yeah, this was another requester. They wanted me to play some classic AC/DC, and this is my favorite track by them. So this is to you, listener.
It's a great song. I believe I have this on my running playlist.
Yeah.
It's one of those songs. It's just pumped up.
It's true.
Got no problem with that.
Bon Scott is king. That's all I'd say.
The Longhorns could use some pumping up after their disappointing loss. Another late game collapse after having a double-digit lead to Oklahoma State. So we'll get back to that conversation, too, because we got some sound from Sark that we didn't get to that I think is actually – pretty revealing. Sark does a really good job of being forthcoming. He can't tell you everything because he's a coach, but if you're listening close enough, you can kind of sift through the detritus and psychoanalyze some of the comments, and he gives you a lot. He gives you enough. And so we'll get into what he thinks about the second half struggles for his offense, right? This is his offense. His offense has struggled. They've been outscored in the second half of the last two games, 41-7. They were outgained in that, the fourth quarter of the game versus Oklahoma State. They were outgained in yardage 170-1. Like, that doesn't even sounds like a fake stat. It's not fake. We wish it was fake. No, that's a real stat. An unfortunate one for Sark and company. So they got a bye week to go back to the drawing board. So Sark was asked about the second half struggles. He was asked about, you know, what are they doing the bye week, right? Schematic changes. What do you do to spark the offense in the second half? I have my thoughts. I'll give you those here in this segment. So we'll do all that. Also, a Texans Tuesday brought to you by our good friends at Bud Light. We got a lot of themes today. A lot going on today. John's Jukebox Joyride happening. It's a Bat Tuesday. Then I got Texans Tuesday. A lot to keep up with on the show today, but it's all right. Yeah, because I'm not solo. Got my man John, who's captaining the dials back there, twisting and tweaking the dials. So we'll get to a Texans Tuesday. We'll do that in the last segment of the 4 o'clock, so around 4:50. All right, 4:50, we'll get to some Texans discussion. I got some interesting nuggets about the Texans, and they cut one of the greatest players in the history of the organization. I mean, and they're a young organization, right? So they're not that old. I think they're less like right around 20 years old. So they're not that old, but still, they cut one of their best players. And we must always preface all of our Texans conversations with, they are intentionally trying to lose. So sometimes I have this anger as a Texans fan, and I have to unchannel it and understand, oh, they're trying to lose. Why would they cut one of the – oh, they're trying to lose. So that's all a part of the conversation. We'll have that conversation about the Texans at 4:45. We got to talk Cowboys, man. The Cowboys, it's so strange to say it. You know, last year I predicted the Cowboys would go to the Super Bowl. Idiot. No, I was an idiot for doing that because they were terrible last year. Of course, Dak got hurt. But I will say that I think that I was starting to see or envision what this Cowboys team was. Now, by the way, Micah Parsons makes a huge difference. Defense is much better. And so does Dan Quinn. All right. But, man, this Cowboys team has a shot. I'm not saying they're going to the Super Bowl. They got a shot. They're in the conversation with the best teams in the NFC. And that's in the conversation with the Bucs. Had a, you know, their only loss to the Bucs this year. It was a tight one. In the conversation with the Rams, Packers, all the teams you throw out there. And the Cardinals, of course, were the lone undefeated team left. And we compared the Cardinals offense and the Cowboys offense yesterday when me and KD were having a discussion. I love the Cardinals weaponry. Right? You got Christian Kirk and A.J. Green and DeAndre Hopkins and Rondale Moore. And I just brought in Zach Ertz. I mean, they're loaded. And they haven't even fully unleashed Kyler Murray yet because they're not using his legs a ton. He's actually being a more of a pocket passing quarterback, but you know he's one of the most lethal dual threat quarterbacks in the NFL, and he can improvise as well as any quarterback out there in the system he's comfortable with. And everybody thought last week the Cardinals would, you know, take a step back because they had no Cliff Kingsbury, no Chandler Jones. They were missing, I think, a couple of other coaches potentially because they had COVID protocol and the guys weren't available for the game. They actually delegated the play calling duties to another assistant coach. Jeff Rogers took over he's the special teams coordinator, but took over the head coaching duties, and they just kept it moving. And they put an Old Testament style kind of butt whipping on the Browns. So the Cardinals are the real deal. And I've been singing the praises of the Cardinals for a couple of years now. Even when they drafted Kyler Murray, a lot of people thought, Cliff Kingsbury is the head coach. I don't think that experiment's going to work. I thought it's one of those things I said, it's just crazy enough to work. There's something that's like, it's just crazy and funky enough to work. As well as because you have to separate yourself in the NFL. If you keep copying the blueprint that everybody has, you're never going to actually either catch the competition, right? You're never going to be able to catch the teams that are at the top of the mountain, the teams that have, accomplished way more than you, that can be a Super Bowl contender, a perennial Super Bowl contender, right, year in, year out. You're never going to catch them if you're always just trying to copy what they do. It'll take you too long. And then because of outside pressures or ownership pressures or whatever, you'll have to make too many changes. There'll be too much turnover for you to have any consistency in the front office, in the coaching staff, in the locker room. Period. For you to be able to have longevity, right, or sustained success, and that's what happens in the NFL. So sometimes you just have to roll the dice with a different different formula. And it may be an obtuse one, a strange one. Now, the Cardinals are all about it. But they went with positionless football. That's why they started drafting guys like Buda Baker and Isaiah Simmons. Chandler Jones supported that, acquiring him. Right? They like guys that can play multiple spots on defense. I think that's the future of football. I've said that multiple times. And even offensively, right? Getting guys like Rondale Moore. But I think it was a real roll of the dice twice for them to go get Cliff Kingsbury, who had been fired from Texas Tech. And then in addition to that, to decide, we drafted a quarterback in the first round, but let's go draft with the number one overall pick. Let's go draft the quarterback that our head coach wants, not the one he inherited. And if they had stuck with the Josh Rosen first round quarterback, I'm not saying he'd have been bad, but he wouldn't have been as compatible with Cliff Kingsbury's air raid system as a guy who grew up in that system as Kyler Murray is, or one similar to it, Cousins, if you will. And then when he got to college, of course, Lincoln Riley system, he was in an air raid system. So, anyway, I like what the Cardinals are doing, but the Cowboys are right there in that conversation. So we will talk Cowboys coming up a little bit later on, too. All right, let's get to the Longhorn topics here. And it's mostly about the late-game collapses by the team overall, right? The defense has their part to play in this. But the most recent collapse versus Oklahoma State, I will put more of that on the offense and less of it on the defense. The adjustments made on defense, we'll talk about it. They weren't extremely effective, but at least there were adjustments. And I think one of the big concerns about Pete Kwiatkowski in the Arkansas game, one of the bigger concerns in the Oklahoma game and those losses, you didn't see a ton of adjustments. You didn't see a ton of adjustments by Pete Kwiatkowski coming into the game, enough schematic wrinkles, enough schematic advantages by him, seemed pretty vanilla with the two high shell looks as if he just trusted his defense to be able to play sound fundamental football and go out there and win one-on-ones. Nah, this group can't win one-on-ones. You got to schematically give them an advantage based on your play calling and based on your game planning. And we hadn't seen that this entire season. I think we saw an effort to try to give the players a schematic advantage in this game defensively. I'll talk about that later, but offensively, I think that's where all the concern is for Longhorn fans. So Sark was asked about the second half struggles. Here is Coach Steve Sarkisian answering the members of the media about what is the deal with why this team has had such a dreadful second half of offense in the last two games.
Well, I think we're all kind of taking turns, you know. For whatever reason, you know, we've had a couple different false starts, which we don't have early in the game, but for some reason they rear their ugly head. We have two issues on snaps. We don't block the same play versus the same front like we blocked it earlier in the game. So ultimately, somewhere in there, that's where I'm talking about that uncertainty in our mind and the cautiousness and not executing with a level of confidence like we do early in the game. Ultimately, that's on me. I've got to get that fixed and get us to a point to where we're believing in what we're doing like we're doing earlier in the ball game. Because the football is 60 minutes, and this has been 2 weeks in a row where whether we're just trying to hold on as opposed to attacking, but we have to get it rectified because you can't play the way we played the second half of this game or the second half of last week's game and be the team that we want to be. The thing is, we're capable of it because we show it. Now we've got to sustain that throughout the whole entire ball game, and that is the issue, and that's what we got to get fixed.
Texas has blown now double-digit leads in consecutive games for the first time since October of 1996. And, of course, outscored 16-0 in the second half, but outgained in the fourth quarter 170-1. That stat is staggeringly ugly. It really is. So there's no doubt there is an issue. He believes, I think Sark believes it's more of a psychological issue, right? He thinks this is probably more of a mental issue more than a schematic issue. He has hinted that, they have, and even the cut you just heard, they have the personnel. The game plan is sound, at least the initial game plan is sound. If they didn't have the talent, how would they be able to get these leads on these teams? Now it's about them being able to sustain this. Here is Sark when he's kind of being asked. I mean, he hints that this is kind of a mental block for this team.
Well, I mean, I do a lot of work in this area. I think this is probably one of the more underappreciated aspects of sport, right? I mean, I think the mental space of the elite competitors historically is something that is really what separated them, whether in any sport, football, basketball, baseball, boxing, whatever that is. I think in recent history, we've tried to dig a little deeper into it and understand it and try to develop it from a team mentality. I'm definitely, this is a portion of me that I believe in. It's nothing necessarily new in the way that we speak to our team and the things that we talk about. But there's obviously a shift in focus of, okay, this is an area where we need to improve upon. And so it can't just be ho-hum, let's keep moving on. We have to do the necessary things to address it. And that started this morning in our team meeting. And so from a psyche standpoint, I feel like that's really kind of in our wheelhouse because we've already laid a really good foundation for that in the 10 months that we've been here. So it wasn't like I've just been a rah-rah coach for 10 months and then today I started to get into the psyche and they were like, who in the heck is this guy? He's never talked about or talked this way to us before. So I think it's a natural progression for us. We've laid a good foundation and now we've just got to dig deeper into that aspect of it.
Yeah, see, I'm glad he's addressing the psychological aspect. I think it's a multifactorial problem, right? If you start looking at things, you know, something happens twice, then, oh, man, that's a coincidence. Happens three times, that's, you know, that's a pattern. Happens four times, a trend. In six of the last seven Big 12 losses for Texas, they held the lead in the fourth quarter overtime. That comes from my man Danny Davis. Great stat by him. So Texas has now blown two back. This comes from my man Jeff House. Great stat. So in the last 31 Big 12 games for Texas football, this is going all the way back to the last regular season game of 2017 versus Texas Tech, where they lost a game where they had a double-digit lead in that game and ended up losing that game. My man Jeff Howe says that out of those 31 games, Texas there are nine games in which Texas lost out of those 31 conference games, going all the way back to Texas Tech 2017, where they had a double-digit lead in the second half. That's crazy. So it seems like this is something that's chronic, right? It seems like this is something that's been happening for a while. And whether it's because Tom Herman, who loved one possession games, right? Texas had more one score games in Tom Herman's tenure than they had than any other Power Five team. I think they were second among FBS teams. You saw that stat during the game. And my man Jeff Howe kept up with it. You've had 30 one score games since 2017, and you're 15-15 in those games. And you've had nine games in the last 31 conference games where you had a double-digit lead in the second half and lost, and two of those have come in the last seven games with Sark, back-to-back games. So it took Tom Herman, 18, 19, 20, you know, three years to rack up those seven losses when you have a double-digit lead in the second half, and Sark's got two. Either way, this is a problem that's been existing for a while. So it's not just, oh, man, it's just a psychological block. You know, it could be fatigue, right? You've had a lot of strength and conditioning coaches. Fatigue could be a part of it. The schematic advantage or lack thereof could be a part of it. That's something that we'll get into later. I think you got to look at it from a multifaceted angle in trying to solve and remedy the issue. Here's Sark when he's asked about, you know, schematic changes he might decide to make to try to remedy the second half offensive issues for Texas.
Yeah, you know, the one thing we're really trying to do early in the week this week, Chip, is let's dig into the things that we do really well. And it's easy to go fix the issues, but I think we first need to identify what are we doing really well. And how do we do more of what we're doing well, or a variation of what we're doing well, whether that's a scheme, whether it's a style of a play call, whether it's a specific position that a player's in on certain plays. So we're really trying to dive into that. And then how do we emphasize that, build upon that, and then looking at things that maybe haven't been very good for us. You know, clearly, you know, everywhere you go, you know, like for myself, you know, we're running plays now that we're better at now than we were running those same plays at Alabama. And there's other plays that we were really good at in the last spot I was at that we're just not, it's not hitting the same force here. And that's okay. Everywhere you go, every team, every year, some things flow a little bit better in one way than the other. And so I think that's the beauty of the bye, is having a chance to reevaluate that and making sure we're doing the things that we do well. But then also making sure that we're putting the players in the best position to do the things that they do well. And that's really what the bye is all about. That's what, especially the early part of the week during the bye, can be really advantageous so that we can do some of the extended work here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. One, to make sure we're reinforcing the things that we're doing well, cleaning up a couple of things that we know we're going to need to be better at so that we can be as complete of a team as we can. But then also making sure that the players are getting put in the position to have success, too, to do the things that they do well.
I like that answer about focusing more on the things you do well. You know, one of my recommendations for Sark to improve the second half offense would simply be to use more of your cheat codes when your offense is struggling, not less of them, right? And I don't know if his offense struggles in the second half because he's using less cheat codes or he's using less cheat codes so his offense is struggling. Yeah, you get me? Like, I don't know if it's chicken or the egg, right? Because his cheat codes include a lot of different things, a lot of moving parts that look wonderful when they're all working together, but when they're not working together, it looks clunky. First half or opening script compared to the second half or the last six drives of the game, right? I applauded Sark because I said in this game you need to use more pre-snap motion because they want to play press man against your wide receivers. He used 76% pre-snap motion. That's the most, it's the highest number that he's had since he's been here at Texas, right? Great number, but in the second half, that number, that percentage, that rate drops to 54% of pre-snap motion on your plays. And then on the last 17 plays where you had six drives, four, three and outs, you had one turnover on downs and one pick, you only had 41% rate of pre-snap motion. Why use less cheat codes? Use more. That's it. Right, empty formation works really well for Texas. They average 10 yards per play so far this year out of empty formation. You had four empty formation plays in that game, including the 58-yard reception by Marcus Washington. You only had one empty formation play in the second half. Use more. You're really good at it. Use more. Bunch formations. He used highest rate of bunch formations in this game than they've had all year long. I love it. 27% bunch formations, you know, but it dropped to 17% bunch formations on the last 17 plays when you had the four, three and outs and the turnover on downs and the pick. Why not more bunch formations, right? You only had one compressed or condensed formation when you were in the last 17 plays, those infamous 17 plays, right? Those last six drives where you came up short. And I think you should try to have more condensed formations. I think Texas had a lot of success out of those condensed sets early on. So my advice, one of my pieces of advice, one of the things they're going to work on during the bye week, which he just admitted, you know, is doing things or at least replicating things that they do really well. Trying to become better at them, trying to perfect them. I would also do that, the things you do really well, and I have the stats to back it up, do more of that when your offense is struggling to spark it, right? The two-back sets, Texas is great in their two-back sets. They started out the game with the, you know, early in the game, they had some great two-back set options. And, you know, they only had nine plays, I think, out of two-back sets. They're averaging almost 7 yards per play out of their two-back sets. But in the last, I think the last 17 plays, they only ran two-back sets twice. Why not run more of the two-back sets? More Rojo, more Keelan Robinson with Bijan. And I just think they did less of that. So the evidence would suggest that Sark uses less of his effective cheat codes when his offense is struggling. But like I said, I don't know if that's the chicken or the egg. Is if he's using less cheat codes, is that causing his offense to be less effective? Or is his offense less effective because he's using less cheat codes? I'm not that smart, and I'm not paid enough money to figure it out. But the data suggests that's happening, no question about it. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into some more Texas football discussion a little bit later on. On the other side, we got to get into some Cowboys discussion, talk about how remarkable the play is right now on both sides of the ball, all sides of the ball, actually, all three phases for the Cowboys. We also got a Texans Tuesday, since we're talking Cowboys. Got to talk a little Texans on a Texans Tuesday, brought to you by our good friends at Bud Light. All that and more coming up right here on RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9, and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to RBKD. How about this for good news, though? At least for Longhorn fans. The Colts apparently have decided to waive Jacob Eason, one of their backup quarterbacks, and they're activating Sam Ehlinger off of IR. This is a move that I don't know which one happened first, whatever, but it is obviously a move that shows their confidence in Sam Ehlinger. As it a quarterback, I don't know if he's not a franchise quarterback of the future, but at least a project, a developmental quarterback of the future for the Colts. And we know that there are numerous reports out there about how much Frank Reich loves Sam Ehlinger. Just his, and what's not to love, right? The intestinal fortitude, the grit, the leadership, the moxie. I mean, the first time that Frank Reich met Sam Ehlinger, unfortunately, was when Sam Ehlinger got the news of his brother passing away. There's a story in Sports Illustrated about it. It's a tearjerker. I mean, it'll have you on the verge. But just talks about how Sam, of course, at the time was distraught. And, you know, Frank Reich talks about, you know, what do you say to someone at the time when they get that kind of news? What, you know, what comfort can you be? And it's a really, really compelling piece. But he's formed a bond with him, and that's easy to form with Sam because, you know, Sam's all about faith, family, football. I mean, that's how he operates. We know that's a phrase people throw out there all the time, but no, Sam Ehlinger, I don't know if he has it tatted on him, but that's what he's all about. So congrats to Sam. I don't, you know, I think that he's going to end up playing, you know, like I said, and I said this when they drafted him, even if he's not a starting quarterback and Carson Wentz is still the guy, because Frank Reich likes situationally for short yardage, 2-point conversions, goal line situations. He likes to use a quarterback that has a running skill set. He did it with Jacoby Brissett. If he's going to put a, you know, a quarterback like Jacoby Brissett in there to run short yardage situations or 2-point conversions or goal line situations, he will definitely do it with Sam Ehlinger. I think that's part of the reason they drafted him so high. So he's going to see the field early. I truly believe that. And that'll keep, you know, Carson Wentz a little healthier, right? They'll allow you, make him a little durable, that he doesn't have to get into those really volatile, high injury risk situations where it's goal line is a quarterback sneak, or you want to run, you know, a quarterback, a quarterback run, a design run, or something like that, and you know that he is fragile. All right, somebody who's, you know, a team that's not fragile right now is the Dallas Cowboys. They are rolling. The Trevon Diggs stats to me are so compelling. So Trevon Diggs is on his way to being a defensive player of the year for the Dallas Cowboys. But how about this stat about Trevon Diggs? And I threw this stat out there last week. Before the Cowboys' most recent win over the Patriots, Trevon Diggs was not only leading the league in interceptions, which he still is leading the league in interceptions, but he also was leading the league in cornerback penalties and had allowed the fourth most yards. Those were all via Pro Football Focus at the time. I hadn't checked him recently, but it goes to what I've always said about what I've said recently about DBs. It's not about how much you get beat, because everybody's going to get beat these days. The passing concepts are too complex. The way they can isolate defenders, the route, really the route combinations, and really the athleticism overall of wide receivers, with the timing and the precision of the offenses, they're going to beat you. And those days are gone where you're like, oh, man, I shut down one side of the field. Great, all-time great athletes probably can do it, but guys like Trevon Diggs are going to get beat. But it's not about getting beat, it's about making plays. And just like in that Patriots game, he makes a play, right? Gets the pick six, gets beat on the next play for the touchdown. By the way, Mike McCarthy said that Trevon Diggs, the reason he undercut that out and up against Kendrick Bourne, ended up being a touchdown, was because he thought that the safety, and I think that was Kazee, was coming over the picket, and that the safety thought that Trevon Diggs was undercutting the route that he was going to go up and pick it. And why not? I mean, he's picking off every damn thing. But he didn't. Both of them misjudged it. Ends up being a touchdown, but the Cowboys still live to fight another day. But Trevon Diggs, he's allowed, I love this stat, he's allowed 42 yards of receiving. 42 yards receiving when the Cowboys have been trailing. He's allowed 0 yards receiving when the Cowboys have been tied. That comes from ESPN. But he's number one in picks and number one in PBUs, actually, too. So he just makes plays on the ball. He's all about making plays on the ball. How about this stat? Most interceptions in first 18 starts. Deion Sanders had 6. Charles Woodson had 5. Champ Bailey was in. I think Champ Bailey also had 5. He's got 10. Trevon Diggs has got 10 interceptions in his first 18 starts. Just freakish stuff. First player in NFL history, in the Super Bowl era, I should say, with at least 7 interceptions and 2 pick sixes in his first 6 games. And him and his brother, Stephon Diggs, actually scored last night. First brother duo to score in the same NFL weekend. I want to say, they said since Vontae Davis and his brother scored in the same weekend in 2009. All kind of crazy stuff happening with the Cowboys, but Trevon Diggs is the real deal. He's going to be a first-team All-Pro, but he may end up winning Defensive Player of the Year. It's going to be hard for somebody to catch him right now. I know it's early on. I mean, we're just basically through a third of the season, but I can't see anybody gathering the type of momentum that he's gathered this far. But it's a long season to go. The Dak injury. We got to talk about the Dak injury really quick because it's not that significant. The Cowboys don't seem like they're worried about it very much. But they did say that it is the same calf injury that Michael Gallup had. And Michael Gallup was out 5 games. I don't think that he's going to be out 5 games. They got the bye week, so I think they're going to focus on getting Dak as healthy as possible. But they said Dak should be available in 2 weeks when the team plays their next game. They said the MRI on Prescott showed no tear in his right calf. He has a calf strain, says Mike McCarthy. The word is optimistic, but with any calf strain, there's a variance in recovery time. The bye week is right on time. McCarthy said Prescott will rest and rehabilitate his calf within the next 2 weeks. Prescott strained his right calf, of course, on that last play, the touchdown pass, the go-ahead touchdown pass against the Patriots. And by the way, people have been throwing this stat out there about Dak and the Patriots, and the stat is it's half right. It's just not complete, right? It's a great stat, but not complete. That basically Dak has thrown, he threw for more yards against the Patriots than any Bill Belichick coach Patriots team, which is a great stat. But take it further. Those 445 passing yards for Dak Prescott, they were the most passing yards ever against any Bill Belichick coach team. No quarterback has ever thrown for that many yards against Bill Belichick as a head coach. That's what needs to be said. Not just the Patriots thing. No. Bill Belichick has never seen a QB throw for that many yards against his defense, ever. And I know that defense is kind of breaking down because Davis Mills had a hell of a game against Bill Belichick's defense. It was one of the top 10 greatest passer rating performances by any quarterback ever against a Bill Belichick coach Patriots defense, I should say. And that was Davis Mills, a rookie. So, yes, things are not what they used to be for the Patriots. But Dak is playing at an elite level. The 16 passing touchdowns, most through 6 games for the Cowboys franchise. And if you start looking at now the offense as a whole, they're going to get better when they get Michael Gallup back. And here's also good news for the Cowboys fans, injury news, but good injury news. Lyle Collins, and he wasn't injured. He was just suspended because he tried to bribe a urinalysis tester. No, I'm not getting into that. But he's suspended for 5 games. Now Lyle Collins is going to be back. So your offensive line now is even more impressive. Pro Football Focus had the Cowboys offensive line greatest, the top offensive line in the NFL. Terrence Steele was playing really well. Tyron Smith has been playing at a high level too. So now they're going to get Lyle Collins back when they get off of their bye week. So, and they'll have Michael Gallup back. So that offense is going to get 2 starters back, and they're already humming and playing at a really high level. And the Cowboys are still the lone and last undefeated team in the NFL against the spread. Yes, the Arizona Cardinals are the last undefeated team for the win-loss record. But in terms of the against the spread, covering the number, Cowboys 6-0. Doing it, and doing it well. And their average margin for cover, at least before they played the Patriots, was around 10 points. So they were actually covering that number convincingly, I should say. All right, so we'll get back to some Cowboys discussion, but the Cowboys are realistically a Super Bowl contender, a little bit of a third through the first third of the season, I should say. So that is not something I don't think any of us expected to actually be talking about this early on about the Cowboys, but they look that good. I also like the 986 total rushing yards. And by the way, Dak hasn't even been a part of the rushing game for the Cowboys. It's been Pollard and Zeke. The most rushing yards through the first 6 games since 1995. So we know they can throw it because they got a ton of weapons in the passing game, but man, they're so adaptable. They can beat you in so many ways. That's what I liked about that Patriots game. They didn't play a great game. They converted less than a third of their third downs in a game versus the Patriots. right? They converted less than a third of those. They also had over 100 yards in penalty yardage. Dak was, he was inconsistent sometimes. They allowed 4 touchdowns on defense, but they won an ugly game on the road. And they found a way to win the game in the end, something the Longhorns have struggled to do. So I like this Cowboys team, and I'm not the only one. All right, we'll come back. Texans Tuesday, brought to you by good friends at Bud Light. We will get in some Texans discussion. I got some news notes and nuggets to share with you. They actually cut one of the, waived, I should say, one of the best players in the history of the franchise. We'll get into that and talk about it. And there's a reason to be optimistic about the development of Davis Mills. We'll talk about all that and more on the other side right here on RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9, and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to RBKD. Time for a Texans Tuesday. I know it's the Bat Tuesday, but also that has morphed into John's Jukebox Joyride Radio as well.
That's right. You got the name right. There you go.
But also, of course, it's a Texans Tuesday, brought to you by our good friends at Bud Light. Yes, we talk Cowboys because Cowboys are a true Super Bowl contender, and we talk a lot of Longhorns. Got to get some Texans in, all right? Got to get a little bit of Texans. How about this as a Texan stat? It's an unfortunate one. Their loss to the Colts. Now they've lost 3 road games by an average of, I think they've lost 3 road games by an average of 26 points. The next closest team would be the Jets at almost 12.7 points per game in terms of their average margin of defeat on the road. Not good. Here's good news, though. I'll start with the good news. I probably should have started with that. And I apologize for starting with the negativity for you Texans fans out there, because I am one, too. Davis Mills, though, last 2 games on third down, he's been pretty damn good. Now, granted, when you get blown out, it probably isn't a priority, but he's 14-15 the last 2 games on third down, 182 yards, 2 touchdowns. And we all remember how he performed in the game versus the Patriots, right? The 7th highest passer rating by any quarterback in a single game versus the Patriots since 2000. The only player to have a higher passer rating versus a Belichick Patriots team in the first 3 years was Peyton Manning. So it was a really good game for him. And I think it's a building block, but right now, the Texans aren't trying to build anything. They're actually intentionally trying to lose. They are tanking, which is why they are waiving Whitney Mercilus, who's in his 10th season. He's old. He did restructure his, and I say he's old from a football sense because I'm old. I didn't mean to be disrespectful. But he's in his 10th season. He did restructure his deal in the offseason. Remember, he was making around $10.5 million per year, and he restructured to get 6 of that turned into a signing bonus to give them extra cap space. I think he had created like $4 or $5 million in cap space for the Texans. So he did have a 4-year, $54 million deal with the Texans, but now he is cut. He's done. He's going to be a free agent, and the Texans, they're moving on. They're going to give a lot of those reps to Charles Omenihu, actually. Lifetime Longhorn can get some of those. He's been a healthy scratch the last 2 weeks for the Texans, which I don't even really understand why he's been a healthy scratch. I think because they've been trying to find reps for him. They got Jordan Jenkins on that defensive front, John Grenard, Jacob Martin. So they may just be trying to give some reps to a young player. I thought for a while, though, they should be investing reps and maybe in a new contract in Charles Omenihu, but they don't want any... They don't want any long-term contracts really right now for the Texans, because they're going to be on the cusp of rebuilding pretty soon. As soon as they successfully tank and get the number 1 overall pick, then they're going to start the rebuilding process. So they don't want long-term deals. They don't really want to have those types of restraints while they're rebuilding. So that's why they're cutting ties with Whitney Mercilus. They also cut return specialist Andre Roberts. At this point, they're just moves to just make sure that the Texans are, I would say, to make sure that they are steering themselves toward a successful tank. And not that Whitney Mercilus, you know, shouldn't be waived, because he is older and his contract is a little bit bloated, but he did restructure. The Texans aren't trying to win, so that's why Whitney Mercilus isn't really a priority for them. I would say one thing about the Texans secondary, though. There have been a lot of changes on the secondary. One of the few things the Texans did reasonably well on defense is rush the passer. Their front 7 isn't bad. isn't a terrible front seven. Now it's going to be less effective without Whitney Mercilus there. But you start looking at that secondary. They've had four different – they've been working on their fifth different combination in the secondary, the starting group in the secondary. And we're, what, six games in? A lot of shuffling. I saw this great stat by Pro Football Focus. There are five teams that are playing the same coverage, you know, that they show pre-snap more than 80% of the time. And the Texans show the same coverage pre-snap that they actually play post-snap 92% of the time. So they don't give you a pre-snap disguise. Well, they do, but only 8% of the time. 92% of the time, whatever the quarterback sees pre-snap for the Texans is exactly what they see post-snap. If you see man before the snap, they're not going to shift and try to confuse you. If you see cover three, single high safety, that's exactly what they're playing. If your pre-snap read tells you it's cover four. Every time. That's how you tank. That is how you successfully tank. Well, you're trying to disguise and confuse the opposing quarterbacks? Nah. And most of the time for Texas, they're playing cover two because it's Lovie Smith. You know what I mean? So it's his Tampa two that he's playing most of the time. So Texans got a lot of issues. It's hard watching the Texans as a Texans fan, I can tell you that. They lost 31-3 to the Colts. And this was the thing going into that game where they got blown out. The Texans actually have played the Colts competitively. I mean, they've actually been pretty competitive the last few years versus the Colts. 13 of the last 14 Texans-Colts games were decided by less than 8 points, so less than, you know, one possession. And the 14th was decided by 9 points. But obviously, this 15th one, if you say the last 15, then you have this 31-3 Old Testament-style butt-whipping. But it's more about the Texans and what their priority is and less about how dominant the Colts are. But shout out to the Colts. They did activate Sam Ehlinger from the IR. So Sam Ehlinger is going to be the backup. Jacob Eason was waived by the Colts. So Sam Ehlinger is going to be the guy. And they're going to use him as a short yardage, red zone, goal line, two-point conversion weapon at times, too. They did that with Jacoby Brissett. I know that's part of what Frank Reich was thinking when he drafted Sam Ehlinger. That had to be part of the attraction to Sam Ehlinger. And he just loves Sam Ehlinger now. They've talked about it. Numerous reports have talked about how his presence in the locker room, he's been a great leader, a great example. The team has grown closer to him. Frank Reich really likes him. And they've gone through a tragedy together because Sam was up there when he learned about the unfortunate passing of his brother and the team. You know, a lot of guys went to the funeral and they've gotten close to Sam. So it might have been the perfect spot for Sam to land in the NFL. I can't think of a better place for him to land, not only to play on the field, because, you know, we know that Carson Wentz is fragile, mentally and physically, but also because of Frank Reich and how Frank Reich he's led kind of by his faith. He talks about his faith all the time and how, you know, he's open about, you know, his spirituality, and he brings that to his coaching style and his leadership style. We know Sam is all about family, faith, and football. It's been a really, really cool symbiotic relationship they got going on. So congrats to Sam being brought up from IR. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into more Texas football. Go behind the burnt orange curtain. Also, off the record, we'll talk about the Washington State story. Had to fire their head coach over his refusal to get the COVID vaccine. Man, we'll get into that, because my man John, he's a graduate of Washington State. He's a proud Washington State Cougar. So we'll talk about what's going on there. We'll get the inside scoop from my man John. Also, we'll talk lots of Longhorn football on the other side. Also, Raj Rant of the Day coming up as well. All of that and more right here on RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260.